So I asked him to sing that song because I think of prayer, spiritual mind treatment, prayer, affirmative prayer, as a means to wash away our troubles. And one of the verses talks about being in nature and in the fresh air, you know, being able to claim positive feelings. And, you know, that's what anybody that knows me knows, that nature has that ability to do that for me. I mean, I'm actually doing it. I realize that. But I'm willing to have the experience of nature shifting the way I feel. So the topic today is spiritual mind treatment, coming from the book the study group is using right now, The Basics of Science of Mind. And I'm going to focus on the 5-step treatment. So when we think about saying a prayer, we're using words, we're using thoughts, and every word, every thought has a frequency, a vibration. And we're looking to change something. I mean, there's something, I mean, that's why we come to pray, is something, and it can be in science of mind philosophy, we say, you know, you can be looking to change something that you don't like, or you can be praying about enhancing what you already love. So you're not limited to only focusing on what's troubling. And so it's through the process of spiritual mind treatment that we take the troubling thought that's a lower frequency and moving it up to a higher frequency, which is aligning us to the spiritual truth of that which we are willing to experience. The other, you know, often it's the opposite of what's going on. It's the opposite of that quality. And so oftentimes, especially if you're new to science of mind, you'll be exposed to writing affirmations, and you can write some really powerful affirmations. And what happens with me, you know, I'll write this really grand affirmation about, let's say, if it's a health issue, I could write, often we say perfect, whole, and complete. That's a common one that we use. And my mind steps in and says, nope, that's not true. You're not perfect, whole, and complete. You have this ache and this pain, and this is going on. And so sometimes you need a bridging statement that you can believe. My body is moving towards a greater expression of perfection. Now that I can believe, because I know the body is very fluid, and if I nurture it and take care of it, it can move to a higher experience of wholeness, of health. So the piece about believing what you say is really key, and we'll get into why that's key even more so now that I have an understanding of the way the brain works in relation to our thoughts. But if you believe something, there's a feeling, there's an emotional reaction, there's a feeling about every thought we have. And so if you can embrace a thought and feel really positive about it and have a lot of conviction about it, the brain will record it. You're creating a new neural pathway in your brain. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But if you're writing a prayer, if you're speaking a prayer, however you pray, to be clear about writing things that you can really embrace. And so in spiritual mind treatment, the first step is the recognition of spirit in the world, the recognition of the power of spirit, and so oftentimes when I'm writing or speaking a prayer, if it's about a specific issue, I look for the quality that I want to experience, because no matter what it is that you want to experience, there's a quality, a divine quality, that is behind that desire, that wants to be expressed more fully in the world. That's kind of the way I've come to see it. And recently, with all of the it started out with the shooting in South Carolina, and then, you know, 5 black churches were burned in I'm sorry, seven in 7 days in the South. You know, that was very troubling to me. I, the shooting was bad enough, and then I heard that, and I was just like, oh, I felt like we were going back in time. I mean, it was just, I was at a, my thoughts were at that low vibration. I was like, oh, this does not feel good. You know, I need to shift this. I need to find a way to feel better about what's going on in the world. And so the quality that I chose that morning when I was writing this prayer treatment was divine order. I have a strong belief in divine order, regardless of appearances. And so recognizing that there is a divine order and things happen in the world, and there's a big picture behind what happens in the world. There's a bigger, broader view than I can possibly ever see or understand. That helps me to release some of the angst around what's going on, if it feels burdensome or heavy or, you know, really negative. And so so divine order was the quality that I was looking for, knowing that spirit is within everything, that love is behind everything, you know. So that's where I started. And so I could also, so then moving into the second step, which is unification, where we recognize our relationship to the divine, to spirit, that spirit is in and of the world and everything in the world, so spirit is within me. I am an expression of the divine. I'm an expression of spirit, and I'm a creative being, and spirit expresses through me. So that's the unification step. And within that, that's uplifting to recognize, you know, who I am as a spiritual being. Then the third step, realization, is where you're getting into making the affirmations about the situation that you're trying to shift, that you want to, you're moving those thoughts up to the higher frequencies of what is possible. And so statements like, even though people lost their lives, even though there's, buildings have been destroyed, something happens, and it's, you know, I was affected. I was affected by these events. And we had a very interesting meeting at my spiritual center, a discussion about these events. And we had two black people that came and shared things that you don't hear very often. The honesty that they spoke from, that they didn't know if they were, because they belonged to mostly a white congregation. They didn't know if they could come to church and find comfort. They didn't believe, or they didn't know. They didn't know for sure that they could find comfort how they were coming from, where they were coming from, would be understood by us white folks. And so it was. I felt so honored to witness this conversation with such honesty. And so events happen, and they can be seen as terrible events, and they are terrible events. And yet, my heart opened to these women that came and talked to us. And at the end of the evening, when we left and we were hugging, I said, thank you for not giving up on us. Because there's enough people, there's enough white people that care and want to make a difference in the world. And I really appreciate that they were willing to, you know, speak their truth. So in the realization step, I recognize that even though there's these terrible events, that it opened my heart. It opened my heart to these two women. It opens my heart to the way that loss opens hearts. And if you heard on the news, when the shooter, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
That's okay.
Yeah, we don't need to put that
in. Yeah, when he was arraigned, and their members of the black church where the shooting took place came to his arraignment, they spoke of forgiveness to him. And it was just, it was very, I mean, it was days after the shooting. I mean, it was just like, wow. That was such a powerful awareness that I had, that they could move to that place so quickly. And I think, you know, a lot of it is a historical experience and the way that all that they've had to endure. And anyway, so once you have made these statements that are higher frequency, you know, so from these events, there's good coming into the world, conversations are happening perhaps like they never have. That was my experience. I've never had a conversation like that before with black people. And just, you know, there's a different experience. And I think a lot of times, because I'm from the white culture, I mean, there's probably no way that I really can ever truly understand the difference experience that being of color makes, because how can I? I mean, I can listen and honor, but it's hard to really have, you know, to know. So from that higher frequency, all of those affirmations that take me to a higher place of divine order. So there's good coming from these events. There's evolution of thought. There's conversations happening. From that, I am grateful. And that's the fourth step, to be grateful. To be grateful to trust that the divine order rules, that there is good coming from what looks horrible. I trust that that is so, and always so. Even though it's not easy or comfortable to be witness to these events, I trust that good is coming from it. And then the last step is release. So we're turning it over to that law of attraction. And so the law of attraction is that mechanism in the universe that recognizes what I'm willing to experience. And here is where the feeling place is important, that the willingness, you feel it in your body, you feel it in your heart, that it's real. Because the more you can embody the quality of the willingness, you know, I'm willing to experience a world where I see evolution, where I see us moving forward. It's very interesting. I was looking for a TED talk for my English class to watch, and there was a scientist that talked about the evolution of the world in like 18 minutes. Yeah. And the last part was so interesting because he talked about humans are the only ones that record history. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's these, every generation, you know, he created these steps, and he's, you know, putting people on the steps, and every generation, we gather what the past generation knew, and we add to it. And we keep going up the stair step of evolution of information, and how that it's sort of, we don't know where it's leading us. And he's saying, you know, we could lead us down a path of destruction, but it could also lead us to being able to solve all kinds of issues that we have struggled with for years and years, that the next generation, because of what they know from the history that's been recorded, they will come to new conclusions and find new resolutions. So there's a lot to there's a lot to feel really positive about, and simply releasing into that universal law, trusting that, you know, the divine order rules and that we are all being guided. And just releasing any concerns and letting those affirmations and those words go, and trust. In the book, it talked about praying for others, and what happens there is often, and it's very it's a very powerful practice to go to someone else for prayer, because when we're in the thick of something that's troubling, it's often very hard for us to move to those higher frequency thoughts. We're having the experience, so we're in the thick of it. It's hard for us to see how it's all going to work out. And so to go to someone else for prayer can be a very sweet experience. And so the person is praying for themselves as well as for the person that that they're praying about. And the person that is doing the praying, it's easy for them to see the divine order of someone else's life. It's easy for them to see that everything is always working out for our highest and best, even though in the moment it may not look that way. And so when people come together to pray together, it's benefiting both people. The one that's doing the, actually speaking the prayer, it's that prayer is for them as well as the other person. They both have a benefit from that. And there's sort of a contagious conviction of the person who has no problem seeing the spiritual truth. So that will influence the person being prayed for. And just remembering that everything is so fluid. You know, it's we think of the physical world as very solid and hard to change, but in reality it's all vibrating energy. And they're just, things are vibrating at different frequencies and different speeds, and that's why things look more fluid than others, and other things seem more solid. And so there is a lot of possibility for change that can happen easily through a shift in our thoughts. All right, so in the book it talked about the realization of truth, and that is to realize the nothingness of a condition. The condition really has no power. And it all began, you know, with a lower frequency thought that manifested in form. And it's not about blaming yourself for what's happened, because a lot of times what happens to us is related to not necessarily our own personal conscious thoughts, but there's a whole race consciousness out there that contributes to our own consciousness that we are unaware of. But the realization of truth is about knowing that beneath the surface is an unchanging perfection, that the spiritual truth is always being revealed, always wanting to be revealed, and that is the perfection. And that the law of attraction, it obeys the spiritual truth being revealed if we call it forth, if we're allowing, if we have the conviction to let it happen. And it described a unwanted situation like a nightmare that we can wake up from, and it's not real. To know that the condition that we want to change is not real. It's an illusion of experience, and that things can and will shift as we allow them to. Okay. So getting now into... So I started reading Buddha Brain just really a few weeks ago. This is a very interesting book about the brain by Rick Hansen. He's a psychologist. And when I was reading it, I was like, wow, this kind of parallels the way that the brain works. There's a parallel between that and spiritual mind treatment, because if we're thinking positive thoughts and there's a feeling place within that prayer, then the brain is recording this as a new neural pathway. And as we think that positive thought over and over again, and this is probably why affirmations work over time, is that we create in the brain this these connections. As the neurons fire together, they wire together. And so it creates this pattern of wiring, and the more that you think a thought, the more that the stronger it is as far as being able to retrieve it as a memory. And all right, so let's see. So the first thing I want you to know from this book is that we really need to cut ourselves some slack, because the brain has a negative bias. It's like, darn. And that negative bias really served us in the past because it helped us survive. So the brain is wired to always be looking for what's wrong. What's wrong, what's wrong, because I need to stay safe. But today, we don't live in the jungle, so we don't really need that skill as much, but it's automatic. So the brain continues to look for what's wrong. And I don't know about you, but I certainly am guilty of looking for what's wrong in myself and in him and her and in the world. And, you know, I mean, I can go there, no problem. And so it takes some conscious awareness. But what's interesting is from childhood, throughout your life, we record events in our brains. I mean, there's a retrieval system that records things in the brain, and depending on, you know, how it's recorded, that will determine how retrievable it is. And there's two kinds of memories. There's explicit memories, which we are very aware of. We can remember the details of what happened. And then there's implicit memories, which are unconscious. And a lot of things that happen in childhood become unconscious. We no longer are really aware of those memories. And yet, something can happen and we're triggered. We don't make the association consciously, but something happens and we, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm angry about this, or I'm feeling upset about this, and maybe we can't even explain why, but that is more likely than not what has happened, is that it's triggered automatically a response from some implicit memory. So, so when we have things happen to us, there's a physical reaction. It's the fight or flight, basically, when something negative happens. All of the automatic things happen in the body. Heart rate goes up. Digestion is slowed. You don't need to digest if you're, you know, trying to run from a tiger. You know, it's that kind of thing. And the immune system is suppressed, so to reduce inflammation, you know, in case you're in a fight with a tiger and you have wounds. I mean, it's just all these physical things happen in the body automatically. And then emotionally, we feel fear and anger and out of control, and reasoning will kind of go out the window, and everybody looks stupid. So that's the survival reaction. That is the stress response. And those, I mean, unfortunately, our society, because we're at such a fast pace, we have a lot of that all the time, which can have really negative impact on our health. So what's happening is when we need the fight or flight, when something is demanding our attention, if there's a threat, that's the sympathetic nervous system that causes all of those reactions. And then afterwards, it's the parasympathetic nervous system that helps bring us back into balance. And ideally, we need both, because we want to feel energized, and that both Eds brought that up in their intention, energized and relaxed, at peace and productive. So that is what we are going for. That is the ultimate goal, is to feel energized and yet relaxed. And so that is obtainable with awareness. So I wanted to give you a personal example of of my own experience with some of this childhood thing coming up. I was sick recently with a respiratory virus. And I mean, it really made me sick. I mean, it took all of my energy. I slept a lot for 2 weeks. And you know, head colds just felt so easy compared to this. Something gets in your lungs, it was slower moving. And by the week two, and I wasn't feeling better, and I was doing all the things I, you know, knew of to do, drinking a lot of fluids and using essential oils, you know, and all kinds of things. And resting, you know, really taking good care of myself that first week. Because normally if I do that the first week, you know, I can go on with my normal routine the second week. Well, that wasn't true this time. And I was feeling really, I was feeling very frustrated and upset, and impatient. And that is not my nature. I'm usually very patient. And I mean, I felt kind of like, this is sort of, but my feelings fell over the top a little bit for the experience of it. And it was after reading this book that I started thinking about that. And there was a time when I was in second grade, when I got the flu. And the other piece that was frustrating about this was that I had this talk coming up, I had a couple presentations coming up that I should be working on. And I just didn't feel like it. You know, I just didn't have the energy. And so, but after reading the book, and when it talked about, you know, childhood things, when I was in second grade, I had the flu. And I'd missed, I'm not sure how much school I'd missed, but enough where my older sister was bringing home homework for me to do. And I remember my mom presenting me with this homework. And she left the room, you know, and I was looking at it, and I just didn't feel like doing it. And I started crying because I just felt, so, you know, I felt like, oh, I can't do it. You know, I just felt so bad. I was still sick. I wasn't ready. And she came in and she was so comforting to me, and she took the homework away and she said, don't worry, you can do this when you feel better. So this is a perfect example of how the brain records the memory. Because I didn't remember so much the positive part about my mom being comforting. I remembered the way I felt. And that's the challenge that we all face because of the way our brains work. Yep. But it's good to know. It's very good to know. It's very good information to know. So the brain automatically records the negative experience better than the positive one. And over time, all of those recordings kind of creates this interior landscape, which is what it feels like to be you. So the goal is to change the negative experience into the positive one. So I think I have already done that, because now I'm focusing on, oh, I took such good care of myself. I was compassionate to myself when I was sick. My mother was really kind to me when I was young and sick. You know, so I think I've worked through some of that, and I think next time I get sick, I'm not going to have that experience. Well, for one thing, I'll be very much more aware of what happened before, you know, and take steps so that I don't go there, that I don't allow myself to go there. I'll have my tools, my spiritual tools. I mean, and I was still meditating every day, but it just, I think, maybe it took the awareness to really shift the experience in my mind. Okay, so here's some ways to take in the good, to pay attention. This is to anchor positive experiences in the brain, to pay attention to all the good around you. There's always good. You can always find something good. And when you do, to savor the experience. So if you stay with the experience, they're suggesting 5 to 20 seconds. If you're savoring a positive experience, you're appreciating it, you're admiring it, you're going into all of the qualities of it, you're embodying it, you feel, you know, any feelings of appreciation are very high frequency thoughts. And so you're bringing, the brain is recording this experience with, oh, this is really good. Okay, let's release some dopamine. Let's release some endorphins. Let's record this as a good experience. And you are creating some of that. You're intensifying it by staying with it. And I think Abraham talks about that. It's the 17 seconds or something. Yeah. So when you do that for even that short amount of time, the neurons in your brain are firing and wiring together and creating a stronger trace in memory. So another way to intensify the situation, or, you know, especially if it's with a person, is to, you know, so say you're with your significant other, maybe you're not on the best of terms or something, but you want to improve the situation, improve your relationship. While you're with them, think about somebody that you feel really good about, that loved you dearly, loved you unconditionally, perhaps a grandparent or a parent or someone. And just bringing that memory up, that positive memory, will release the oxytocin. Am I saying that right? Yes. Which is the chemical from the brain that creates a sense of bonding and connection. So you can use positive memories to enhance what's going on currently in a relationship. Imagine positive experiences flowing into your body like warmth of the sun, that, you know, you're absorbing it in your body and it's sinking into those childhood pains, those pains of the past, the wounds of the past that perhaps are unhealed, even if you don't know what they are. Just imagine positive experiences transforming them. And they say that if you do that several times a day, that over time, it will shift how you feel. And that's what they call the neuroplasticity, that our brains are capable of changing, that they're very plastic. So this is a direct quote I thought was very interesting. The reason healing takes place when you share a concern with a caring person is because the painful feelings get infused with the comfort, encouragement, and closeness you feel with that other person.
That's good. Again.
The reason healing takes place when you share a concern with a caring person is because the painful feelings get infused with the comfort, encouragement, and closeness you feel with that other person. Mm-hmm. I thought that was beautiful. So as far as the brain goes, you know, I talked about the traces, the electrical synapses, the wiring, and how the more you think a thought, the stronger the connections are. The busiest lines survive. The busiest lines of thought in your brain survive. So as you begin to shift away from negative thoughts, they will wither. Those connections will wither, and the positive ones will become stronger. So this is another good quote that I wrote down. Based on this science, it is fundamental to be kind to ourselves, to cultivate wholesome experiences, and allow time and focus to take them in. So there's a huge benefit to, and when I'm reading this book, all I kept thinking, they're talking about Connie's life here. This is how she lives. She cultivates wonderful experiences. She savors it. She takes it in. I mean, you can almost feel it in her body. You know, she just exudes the wonder of life. And she finds wonder everywhere she goes. And so over time, she really has shifted the wiring in her brain because of all of the practices and the events she goes to and in all the spiritual practice and everything that she does. And so she is a brilliant example of what is possible. It is suggested that you look over your childhood. They say that you probably can find a short list of events that happened that would cause you triggers. And then you know what you're working with, although, like I said, a lot of them are implicit and you will not remember them. So spiritual mind treatment, you know, we're usually looking at the opposite. If there was a time in your childhood where you felt weak, you know, now you're going to feel strong. If there was a time you felt unloved, you're going to recognize that you are dearly loved by so many people. So you won't forget what happened, but you'll lose the emotional charge of it. And that's the important piece, is to lose the emotional charge so that you're not responding, not reacting. And here's another quote. We are working on creating an artful balance where we are mindful, accepting, and curious about painful experiences while taking in supportive feelings and thoughts. We are working on creating an artful balance where we are mindful, accepting, and curious about painful experiences while taking in supportive feelings and thoughts. So to be curious about a painful experience, that's interesting. That's a new way to look at it that feels a lot easier and softer. So feelings and emotions organize the brain. Positive ones have great health benefits which give you a strong immune system and allows that fight or flight to lessen. We're not reacting. Feeling good today increases the likelihood of feeling good tomorrow. Yep. Okay, so this last piece is where I made a parallel between, is it all right if I continue on? Mm-hmm. I made a parallel between so this is coming from the book, the stages of reaction. There's four stages. This is from Buddha Brain. And then I remembered the four stages of spiritual evolution from Reverend Michael Beckwith. And so stage one of reaction is called unconscious incompetence. And the first stage of spiritual evolution is it's about feeling like a victim. So we think life happens to me, there's no control, I'm a victim. So the example they give from the book, I'll go through each one of these four stages in the example. The example they give from the book is your partner forgets to bring home the milk. Now, in the book, they call that a dart. Something negative happens in life, and bam, you know, you've got this dart. And that happens. It happens to everybody. So your partner forgets to bring home the milk. You complain angrily without seeing that your reaction is over the top. You take it personally, triggering past associations of feeling powerless and unloved. Now, when you do that, when you respond that way, you are throwing darts too. So you're making it worse. You're adding to the darts of this negativity. You're not aware of what you're doing. So that's the first stage. Stage two of the reaction is conscious incompetence. The spiritual evolution equivalent is that you begin to understand how the universe works. You might say, I may use the universal law of attraction to make things happen. Things can go my way if I focus my thoughts in a positive way. But you haven't mastered control over your thoughts yet. So in that first scenario, your partner doesn't bring the milk. You react in frustration about having no milk, even though you have an awareness that you have been hijacked by past associations that have nothing to do with this moment. You are internally squirming due to your unwarranted reaction, but you can't stop yourself from grumbling bitterly. You feel frustrated that your needs aren't being met due to the absence of milk. They say this is the hardest stage because we see how far we have to go. The third stage in the stage of reaction is called conscious competence. And then the spiritual evolution stage is that you have experienced some wonderful success now in controlling your thoughts and staying at peace in at least some areas of your life. So you might say, I allow spirit to work through me, for I am willing to be divinely guided toward the highest and best results. Now, when your partner doesn't bring home the milk, you are aware of being disappointed and irritated, but not about not having milk, but you choose not to act on it. You remember that your partner does a lot for you, and getting cranky will only make things worse. You are willing to take the higher road. You choose to respond consciously, and that response is compassion and love. The fourth stage, the last stage of reaction, is conscious competence. I'm sorry, unconscious competence. And for spiritual evolution, it is life is feeling easy these days, for you remain in the divine flow. You have mastered control of your thoughts without having to think about it. You have created the habit of thinking positively in all situations. You automatically allow spirit to express through you as you are willing to be the source of love. You might say, I am one with spirit in all of life. I am a beneficial presence of unconditional love spirit expresses as me. So now your partner does not bring home the milk. The reaction doesn't come up. And sometimes you even forget that you had an issue of your needs not being met. You simply understand that there is no milk and trust that you and your partner will figure out what to do about it. You are lighthearted about life, knowing everything is working out for your highest and best. So that is what we're moving towards. Unconscious competence. So thank you all for giving me your attention and for listening, and I trust that we will help each other move to that last phase where we simply have created a pattern of positive thinking and have that we have our system and our body working for us. We have the energized enthusiasm with the peace and the ease. Namaste.
Thank you, Jen.